In this segment, we will continue our discussion of quality measurement and improvement. We will continue with the topics of definitions and operationalization of quality measurement and improvement, and then we'll look at a number of widely used quality measures. The remainder of the topics listed will be covered in the following segments. So let's start out with discussing some definitions and how we operationalize them. So what exactly is healthcare quality? Well, there are certainly a number of views. One of the thought leaders in healthcare quality has been Don Abedian, who stated in 1988, his first book on healthcare quality, that it is that kind of care which is expected to maximize an inclusive measure of patient welfare after one has taken account of the balance of expected gains and losses that attend the process of care in all its parts. Another definition has been put forth by Lohr, who was the lead author on an Institute of Medicine report published in 1990, who defined quality as the degree to which health services for individuals and populations increase the likelihood of desired outcomes and are consistent with current professional knowledge. These definitions and others were reviewed by Blumenthal in 1996. Now, of course, fast forwarding to the current century, current decade, we have an era of rising costs. We have concerns about quality of the care that's delivered, and there is a growing recognition that physicians and the healthcare system must have some amount of public accountability. Yet, it's not clear that we know all of the right things to do when it comes to improving quality. So both the research in terms of looking at how to best implement quality and achieve results and the practice that that research engenders are still evolving, as described by this recent paper by Don Berwick, another leader in the quality movement. Don Abedian has developed a model of quality, developing three categories of quality measures. These are structural measures, so these are factors that make it easier or harder to deliver high-quality care, and we'll see some examples of these in the next slide, but things like hospital location, patient volume, whether the hospital is associated with the teaching institution. The second category is process measures. These are factors that describe healthcare content and activities, so how much screening is done, how much adherence there is to established practice guidelines. And then finally, outcomes, changes in that are attributable to care, such as how the patient does, the mortality rate, morbidity that develops, functional status, and so forth. And in addition to these categories, these are then implemented and measured at different levels at an institution, the individual practitioner, the department, and the whole organization. So here's a table that has the types of quality measures going down the rows, and across the columns are the level at which it is measured, the individual, the department, the organization. So some of the structural measures are whether individuals are professionally certified, whether departments do appropriate staffing analysis, whether an organization has various licensures. Process measures are things like performance evaluation of individuals, monitoring of their productivity, reviewing their performance indicators at the department level, how much screening they've done, how much they've adhered to guidelines. And outcomes are really what we ultimately want to measure. Do patients actually do better? Do they obtain better health? So things like practice profiles of individuals, errors at departmental levels, and mortality rates or quality sanctions at organizational levels. Let us explore a little further this notion of process versus outcomes. As we will see, many quality measures are about process, what things get done. But the reality is that we want quality measures that measure outcome, how patients actually do, how their health improves, or how safety is increased. So outcomes represent what actually happened to the patient, but they can be, first, difficult to measure, and also have confounding factors. We may provide the highest quality process care, but for a reason unrelated to that care, the patient has a bad outcome. So we might want to know whether there's a relationship between process and outcome. And in some areas, such as acute coronary syndrome, there's a strong correlation between the two, the process measures that are undertaken and the outcomes that result. But in other areas, the relationship is not as strong. In particular, we know that satisfaction with care oftentimes does not have a correlation with its technical quality, in that patients may feel satisfied with the care that they have received, but it may not be of the best technical quality. We also know that the science behind care changes. So, for example, the clinical thinking about the tightness of control of diabetes changes over the years. Some of these get incorporated into quality measures, but it may turn out that the science of care has changed, so the quality measure needs to change. And there's not always consensus. For example, there's a lot of interest, especially in with regards to safety, about drugs to avoid in the elderly, but it turns out that it's difficult to achieve consensus on what those drugs actually are. So if we're going to assess quality, we need to measure it. If we're going to measure it, we want good measures that we can use. And a number of authors have written on this. Landon has advocated that quality measures should be evidence-based, so based on the best evidence that we know for healthcare delivery. There should be agreed-upon standards for satisfactory performance by clinicians. There should be standardized specifications so clinicians know what to expect and they can be compared across different departments or institutions. There should be an adequate sample size so we have reliable estimates of the quality. There should be some mechanism for adjusting for confounding patient factors such as comorbidity, numbers of coexisting illnesses, socioeconomic status, and the like. We should have measures that can be attributed to individual physicians or other practitioners. It needs to be feasible to collect these measures, and the measures should be representative of the activities of a specialty, perhaps not everything that a specialty does, but a good representative sample of different things that physicians in a specific specialty do. Another thing to remember about quality measures is that they have to consist of data. And many people in many contexts often quote Edward Deming, the famous statistician, who said, "In God we trust, all others bring data," which means that for all of us humans, we need to bring data to measure quality and act on it. As long as we are defining things, let's talk about some other definitions. Another term we'll talk about and gets discussed often in the context of quality is pay for performance. In fact, some people equate quality assessment with pay for performance, but it's important to remember that pay for performance is just one approach to measuring and acting on healthcare quality. And the notion behind pay for performance is that healthcare should be held accountable financially for what it does, but of course healthcare needs to be held accountable in other ways as well. So pay for performance is important. We'll talk about it quite a bit, but it's not the only way to bring about improvements in the quality of healthcare. Another term that gets used is value-based purchasing, which is really just an application of pay for performance. So value-based purchasing means that we make decisions to purchase healthcare based on quality, and we may decide to not purchase healthcare from a hospital or a physician or physician group. The uptake among employers of value-based purchasing has been relatively modest, even though employers employ value-based purchasing in everything else. For example, car manufacturers will look at the value of the steel that they purchase. The food industry will look at the quality of the food. Yet with healthcare that employers provide to their employees, there's very little in the way of seeking value. And of course, part of the motivations for the healthcare quality movement is to change that. So now that we've discussed what we know about quality, let's talk about some of the ways that it can be measured, and that will then lead us into discussions of how we actually make those measurements and apply them to try to improve the quality of care. Now, one warning with quality measures is that there's probably way too many of them, and they're constantly changing, and they're in different sets, and they have different acronyms. So in the slides that follow, in the rest of this segment, I will give you an overview of some of the major efforts. There are plenty more of these as well, and for anyone who was seriously moving to implement quality measures, you really need to drill down into the details. Again, as I already stated, Berwick has noted that we're early, as he describes, in the science of quality improvement. What exactly is that science? There's an Institute of Medicine report that described the science behind healthcare quality assessment. So there have been many measures that have been developed, and these reflect different perspectives, somewhat like standards. AHRQ actually maintains a clearinghouse of these measures, so one can actually go look at different types of measures that are available, where they're being used, and so forth. But there is clearly a growing consensus that we need to develop standardized sets so that we can implement them in standardized ways and obtain value from them. So in the remaining slides, I will talk about specific quality measures, and I will organize my approach to this by looking at different perspectives. So one is the perspective of health plans, then the perspective of outpatient medicine, and finally the perspective of inpatient medicine. So first I'll begin with health plans. Why health plans? Well, there's a historic role here. Health plans have been among the first to measure quality, at least as process measures, and act on it. So they should be noted and commended for being pioneers in this area. And in fact, there is a healthcare quality measurement set called HEDIS, the Health Plan Employer Data and Information Set, developed by NCQA, which has 60 measures that are mainly healthcare process measures used to evaluate health plans and particularly health maintenance organizations. And the NCQA reports, as I mentioned a few slides back, calculate lives saved based on outcomes that occur from adherence to these process measures. So HEDIS has a number of categories and then specific measures within those categories. So effectiveness of care, things like childhood and adult immunization, use of beta blockers after myocardial infarction, screening for various types of cancer, and a number of measures related to chronic diabetes care. There's also measures on access and availability to care, so access to preventive health measures, how available primary care providers are, and they have specific ways of measuring that, which you can find in more detail on the NCQA website, and how soon prenatal care is initiated after a woman has been diagnosed as being pregnant. There are also measures related to satisfaction with care, so member satisfaction surveys, and also the use of various services, such as preventive measures. So these measures are all used and allow health plans to compare themselves to other health plans. What about quality measures for the outpatient setting? This is an area where there have been many different types of measures, even confusion around what should be measured for a given patient, for a given insurer, and things like that. So there has been an effort in recent years to standardize quality measures in the outpatient setting. This has led to the formation of the Ambulatory Care Quality Alliance, also called AQUA, which developed a starter set of measures, of quality measures, that were endorsed by the major primary care associations, such as the American College of Physicians and American Academy of Family Physicians, as well as the health plans. Another activity of quality in the outpatient setting is under the Medicare plan in the U.S., the Physician Quality Reporting Initiative, or PQRI, and this program has stepped up the amount of quality measures each year, but basically operates by providing a small, in this case 2% reimbursement increase in Medicare payment for both reporting on what are becoming a relatively large number of measures and also the use of e-prescribing. And so you get an extra 2% for each. PQRI in 2009 had a total of 153 measures that physicians participating in were required to report on. Let's look further at the AQUA measures. They fall into 8 main categories, representing the major diseases or activities that primary care physicians deal with. So prevention, coronary heart disease, heart failure, diabetes, asthma, depression, prenatal care, and also quality measures that address overuse or misuse of healthcare resources. Now, one concern about these measures, or really any quality measures, is that these measures don't represent the entire spectrum of standard of care. They're only a sampling of some diseases, and even within those diseases, of some measures that provide a way to assess quality. But again, they don't represent the entire spectrum of care that should be delivered, and sometimes an unintended consequence is that clinicians focus too closely on these measures rather than the bigger picture of overall care. So these are some of the prevention measures: breast cancer screening, the percent of eligible women screened in the last 2 years, colorectal cancer screening, the percentage with appropriate screening, and of course there's different ways to screen for cancer: sigmoidoscopy, colonoscopy, cervical cancer screening, i.e. pap smears, tobacco use, percent of patients who were queried about the use of tobacco in the last 2 years, advising those who smoke to quit, influenza vaccination in the 50 to 64 age group, and pneumonia vaccination, the percent whoever received. Here is a listing of the diabetes measures related to glycolated hemoglobin management and how good of control patients are in, blood pressure, lipids, eye exams, and so forth. There are also measures for inpatient settings. Much of this activity focuses around an organization, or really collaboration of organizations, called the Hospital Quality Alliance, or HQA. This is a collaboration among CMS, the Joint Commission, and others who have created a starter set of quality measures for various conditions, initially focused in 4 areas. The Hospital Compare Project then is a voluntary program where organizations that submit these quality measures have them published on a website so individuals can compare one hospital with another with regards to these quality measures. The HQA project actually consists of 2 programs based on reporting that is done to CMS. One part of the reporting is the reporting hospital quality data for annual payment update, or RHQ DAPU. This is for the HQA data in the four areas, and hospitals that don't participate actually have a 2% reduction in their Medicare reimbursement. There's another collection of information that are not process quality measures, but actually patient satisfaction measures. This is the Hospital Consumer Assessment of Healthcare Providers and System, or HCAHPS, and this is a measure of patient satisfaction that's also reported as part of the Hospital Compare project. Here are the HQA categories and some examples within them. So the broad categories are myocardial infarction, heart failure, pneumonia, and surgical infection prevention. Within them are a variety of mainly process measures, and these are the quality measures that are reported within HQA and made available on the Hospital Compare website. So among the measures for myocardial infarction are things like aspirin at arrival at the hospital, when the diagnosis is made and discharge, inpatient mortality. For heart failure, the provision of discharge instructions and the evaluation of the patient's left ventricular systolic function, a measure of heart failure. For pneumonia, the measures include time to blood cultures and antibiotics, as well as vaccinations for pneumococcus and influenza. And for surgical infection prevention, the measures look at prophylactic antibiotics, as well as prophylaxis for deep venous thrombosis. There are some other quality initiatives in the inpatient setting that are not tied into the U.S. government and Medicare reimbursement. A long-standing ongoing project is the National Surgical Quality Improvement Program, or NISQIP. This is an effort mainly led by the American College of Surgeons to measure, risk adjust, and improve the quality of surgical care. For organizations that are academic medical centers, there's the University Health System Consortium, or UHC, which was once called the University Hospital Consortium, and the focus of UHC is on quality measurements for benchmarking academic medical centers, and data is provided to UHC, and reports are returned to each organizations, and some of you who may be part of those organizations are familiar with the green dots and the red dots. Anywhere from 1/2 to 1 to 2 of each of these representing positive deviation or negative deviation from the standard of quality.